The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 718. It's the 23rd of February, 2017. On the podcast today, I have John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, that's SML, answering private investor questions. Also on the podcast, Rod McIlree, CEO of Finance Mining, FIM, goes over recent news at the company, including the forthcoming change of name to Blue Jay Mining. Ticker there will be J, J-A-Y. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Barclays, Glencore, and BT. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about feedback, advanced oncotherapy, and defense. That's DFX. And of course, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals. That's SML ticker. John, thank you for coming back on.
Thank you very much, Justin, for having us back.
Now, we've got a bit of a question and answer session. Had some questions submitted by private investors. We'll get to that in a bit. But as always, I'd like to remind people who are not aware of your company exactly what you do, John. So give us a brief summary as to what Strategic is all about, please.
Okay, well, I guess, again, as the name suggests, we're after strategic minerals, etc. But we're a bit of a unique company on the AIM, really, because we're one of the few companies that has an operating asset. So that operating asset is our magnetite stockpile in the US, where we have access to quite a large stockpile there. Because of the drop in iron ore prices over the years, originally it was aimed to export it, but mainly sells locally. But it's done us fairly well. We're actually going to show a profit for 2016, and things are looking good for one for 2017. And that helps to run our whole business. Then what we then do is we then take capital raisings that we have and then try to feed them into mining or mineral opportunities. We've got one brownfields one, which is our tin tungsten mine in Cornwall, under Cornwall Resources Limited, which is moving along, and some of the questions will help to update on that as well. And of course, the other one we have is Strait Exploration. We have a number of tenements with a joint venture partner, Rarus, under a company called Care, which has been doing some exploration work. We had some nickel sulfide finds. And again, we'll talk a little bit about what that's going to come up as we go.
Yeah, so you're a nice mix of revenue and exploration there, covering a lot of bases. So that's good. Okay, let's get to the first question. The company has made a lot of announcements about the tin tungsten project in Cornwall. How is this progressing? And what has community reaction been to the planned drilling progress?
Yeah, look, the Redmore project moved along quite well, actually, and our partnership with New Age Exploration has proven been a very beneficial one for both of us. Our shares have gone up heavily, doubled at least since the joint venture. And now that we've exercised our options, put the money in, we're on a 50-50 basis, and this has given our team a chance to push the site access and the planned drilling program ahead. Last week, we had a community meeting organised by the mayor, Mark Smith, and that had over 150 locals attend. This went very well, and while I've been saying that we could commence the drilling program the first half of 2017, our progress with the local community, getting access, signing up access, and advancing the drilling tender program suggests we'll be in a position to sign the drilling contract and commence mobilisation probably this quarter.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going well there. All right, next question is, what are the prospects for the remaining tenements in Australia outside Hans Camp and Mount Weld?
Well, that's an interesting. The care tenements are all situated in areas where desktop analysis has indicated that there's some prospectivity. The trouble is, of course, maintenance of the tenements are not overly expensive. But what we've been concentrating on to date is on those. We've tried to concentrate on those tenements that have the highest likelihood of being economically attractive. And as you know, drilling is an expensive exercise with no guarantee of success. So what we're concentrating at the moment is to review the results of last year's drilling and prepare ourselves for the Mount Weld drill, where we're looking for both gold and rare earths. And these are in very mineral-rich areas. So, for example, while the new drilling we hope will bring in data from that tenement, let's not forget that the drilling we did last year indicated platinum mineralisation. Now, that's associated, there was science for cobalt. And cobalt appears to be a very strategically critical element for powering electric cars and those things and the batteries, etc. And so we're currently reassaying several enriched platinum zones, and we're expecting that that may show us enriched cobalt. And we think that's got the potential of being a very large kicker on value for us.
Yeah, okay. Time to get your crystal ball out, John. And this kind of question always comes up, but so we put it to you. What do you expect the share price to be in 2018? It doesn't give a date or time or anything, but generally in 2018.
In 2018, well, mate, as I said, I'm getting out my little crystal ball that they've given me, and that I've bought off some little gypsy woman for about £10.
Nice.
And I'm looking into it. Nah, seriously, you would have seen that we actually have management has a number of options which expire in the middle of 2018. And these only vest if the share price reaches 1.5p. I have a large number of those options, so I can assure you I'm trying to drive the share price over that horizon to that level. And I believe some of the chartists have actually indicated levels of 1.8p. Yeah. And the charts are actually very favourable at the moment on our stock. So we're actually seeing, I think, a bit of support associated with that. We seem to be breaking a couple of support levels, mm-hmm. and we seem to be powering on at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. I've had a couple of CEOs say, listen, you know, as far as share price is concerned, we can't tell. All we have to do is work hard, and hopefully the share price will react accordingly. So I assume that's what you're doing there, is working hard, and hopefully the share price will follow. Isn't that the case?
Well, we've been doing that for a while, and as I keep saying to you, I've believed our shares are really undervalued. Mm. And I'll mention that again in another part of the answers to this thing, but realistically, what we're really seeing is, I think we're seeing some of the market starting to shake off the negative gloom it had before. So people such as ourselves that have an underlying asset that are worthwhile are starting to get revalued back up. And I think there's still a fair way to go with that. And I think we've picked a couple of resources. The tin emphasis price has been doing pretty well. And then the nickel sulfide, if we get the cobalt, God, that'll be a real beauty.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Question four. When will the actual figures for the maiden profit be released? It's been announced since September.
Yeah, Justin, I've tried to indicate we're going to have it, and we've been saying this for a while, obviously enough. I obviously can't release profit figures until our auditors, BDO, have completed their review. Now, that's not likely until about April or later. You got to remember, we're not a big company, so we're not prioritised in the reviews, etc. But I've tried to keep the market fully informed so there wasn't a surprise on this. And also, at the same time, I can say that I'm confident that we're looking at several thousand US dollars as a profit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's about as far as I can go without actually having audited financial numbers.
Course, yeah. Okay. Is there potential to provide significantly more income than self-funding of SML, particularly with the rise of iron ore prices?
Well, our Cobre operation, generally, the movements in the iron ore prices have little impact on sales at Cobre because of the fact that they're mainly servicing domestically in a radius that's supported by the cost of transport. And that creates the barrier to trade. So we've haven't been as buffeted by changes in prices. That said, though, there is a critical point where, and that changes, sorry, depending on port costs and transport costs, etc., but where it becomes economic to take that product and ship it offshore, whether it's done by yourself or done by someone else. And the recent rise in the iron ore price is starting to get closer to that level. So we're keeping a very close eye on that. And apart from that, of course, all of us have been hearing, and we're getting a lot of word that the US is starting to move again a bit under the Trump administration. Mm. People are starting to get a bit more confidence, and there seems to be a bit of a greater groundswell there. And in fact, our director Peter Whale is about to visit the Cobre mine with a review with the idea of reviewing potential sales opportunities with Clovis Hooper, the president of our highly owned subsidiary Strategic Minerals Group over there. You know, but realistically, what we're saying is we're starting to see greater activity. It's making us much more confident that we'll be able to actually turn a profit again in 2017. And we're just trying to build on it as we go. Any chances we get, we follow. But as you know, in this sort of business, quite often there's a lot of people who want to ask you for a price but never actually come back and actually buy. So yeah, we do our marketing, but it is looking good.
Okay, good. Do you need to raise more cash via equity in the short term?
We actually had a discussion about this a few weeks ago where I mentioned that in October we did a raise, and we did a raise specifically to get the remainder of the money we would need to exercise our option at Redmore, the Cornwall tin tungsten mine. Mm-hmm. We went out, we asked for £400,000 at 0.4 of a P. We got offered $1.71 million at 0.4 of a P. Now, unlike a lot of companies, I will say this, we didn't just take the money off the table. We took what we thought was necessary to provide us an amount and a reasonable buffer, but we didn't do it because we felt the stock, even at 0.4, was very undervalued, and it would be unfair on our shareholders to take that sort of money in at that point and do that much dilution. And as it turned out, I mean, our share price now is over double that. So I think we've been vindicated in what we do. Now, the other day when the share price was running a bit, I rang one of the brokers and asked them what was going on. And the first reaction I got was, "You're not going to raise, are you?" And they thinking that we're just trying to capitalise on a run in our share price. Well, I'm not interested in that because, one, I don't want to try and trick people into buying our shares and suddenly it falls back. If it's got to be at a reasonable price you're issuing, because you want your shareholders to be there for a longer time. And again, one of the things I reiterated to them, and I say it again, is that we raise money. We don't have to raise money to keep the lights on, right? So when we raise it, really to make it the most efficient use of the capital, we try to do it in line with some sort of a project or funding requirement that's moving the value of the company on. So the short answer there is, unless at the moment we don't have a plan to raise any. If we have a project, then we may come back to the market, but it'll be specific to that sort of nature.
Yeah, so it's value accretive, really. So it's you know, it's gaining value rather than just doing it, like you say, to keep the lights on. Yeah. Okay. Question. The market cap is around 10 million now. Is there a lot more upside potential? What's your ambitions for Strategic?
Yes, well, as I said before, well, I'm targeting a 1.5 share price by mid next year. Mm-hmm. And that would give us a market value of about £80 million. Now, I believe that, you know, from all the discussions I've had with people in the market, etc., I'm very keen to try and get us to a point where institutional investors will start investing, because I think it beds down the share register better. It'll give us more constant buy and sell. And the trigger that I've been told by a few of the people in the market is to get ourselves over a $20 million market cap. Mm-hmm. So if we continue along that route, we probably would do that. But, you know, to get there, or to make sure I try and get there, I'm really looking at still an acquisition. And so acquisition is either going to be by direct investment or through use of our share capital, you know. These are always something that we're looking at the time. We're a very liquid stock. We turn over between about 1% and 2% of our share capital each day. Mm. And what I want to do is use that advantage to provide a benefit to my shareholders. So because of that, it opens up opportunities for us to do corporate-style arrangements that may benefit shareholders.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And the last question, when are you going to be in the UK, and will shareholders get a chance to meet you outside the AGM?
Yeah, Justin, I might have mentioned last time, I'm actually going to be in the UK all of May and June. And the beauty about that is it's going to give me the opportunity to go down to the Redmore drilling site, see many of our shareholders, both current and potential ones, and as well as discussing some longer term plans with capital market participants about, you know, what might happen, particularly say with Redmore, if we have favourable results and who might want to partner with us and where, how we might move it forward. I've already made some arrangements to meet Charles Manners, whose family recently moved past the 3% holding level. And I believe, Charles, good on you, mate. I believe you're buying more, so I'm glad to hear that. And I also want to set up some sort of a room or something, or at a pub or whatever it might be, in London on a date which I'll advise, and just make myself available to shareholders to come in if they want to.
Yeah.
And, you know, ask what they like. I mean, I know. Unfortunately, I've already committed to having lunch with you, Justin, so, you know, there goes the neighbourhood.
Yeah, as long as you're buying.
Of course.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. Well, I'm sure people will get a range of you, announce that. We'll spread the word anyway. You know the score now, John. Three reasons why someone who's not following you should hit that follow button on your Vox Markets page, please.
Okay, well, straight off value, we just talked about targeting 1.5 and the stock's about 0.85. So over an 18-month period, if you do that, no one's going to complain about that sort of return. Secondly, growth orientated. I can tell you now, we are looking to grow the company further, and with that will come up opportunities to add more accretive value each time. And I think lastly, probably the management team. I think we've proven ourselves, I don't know whether this is appropriate to say, but a little different than most people, that we're actually an honest, real management team on AIM, looking to move the thing forward. What we say is what we try to do. We try to build a strategy. We follow the strategy. Almost everything we said last year, we've done, you know. So that's very important. You know, a bad management or one management you can't trust is not someone you want to leave your money with.
Yeah, excellent. John, thanks very much for that. And look forward to speaking again in a not too distant future. And like I said, listen, it's SML for people wondering. And I'm sure people can meet up with you when you come to London very soon. Thanks, John. Speak soon.
Thank you very much, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Managing Director of Finhouse Mining, that's FAM ticker, Rod McIlree. Thanks for coming back on, Rod.
Good morning, Justin. Sorry it's been so long. We have been busy, though.
Yeah, well, listen, I've been looking at the RNS list here, and there's been at least three significant bits of news out since we last spoke, and we'll get into that. But if anyone's new is listening right now, Rod, and they're not quite sure, you know, I've never heard of you or just heard of you a little bit, can you remind them what Finhouse Mining is all about, please?
Yeah, look, Finhouse Mining, I guess, is a sort of a Nordic-centric exploration company. We've got some pretty significant interests in Greenland and also Finland. I myself have worked in Greenland for the last 11, 12 years, quite successfully on a number of fronts, and we're levering off that experience.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go back to the news. On the 31st of January, you announced you've strengthened your management team. Take us through this, if you could, please, Ron.
Yeah, look, I think, I guess one of the things that has been maybe slightly unorthodox with our approach to the Pitofic Titanium Sand Project is our sort of parallel work streams. A lot of these things, historically, by many other companies, are done in sequence, mm-hmm. and they're based on the success of the previous work studies. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're very confident about as the management of Pitofic is the resource statement. The project itself is a sand-based ore body. It's sitting at the surface. It's visual. You can see it. You know, I've mentioned before that to get a full appreciation of this ore body, you've got to get in a helicopter and go up to 1,500 metres to look at the entirety of the length of the beach. Now, what we have, fortunately, is the confidence to start all of these work streams together, and the appointment of the mineral sands sales or marketing specialist in the form of Bruno announced on the 25th of January is just an example of us not wasting time. You know, we don't need the resource to be out to appoint a marketing specialist and or the technical team, logistical team that's going to execute the project.
Yeah, yeah, I see. Oh, so that's a separate bit there. So that's Bruno there appointed as a mineral sand specialist, and you strengthened the team there. And also, more recently, just in February 10th, they've seen some positive changes to the licences in Greenland. What's happened here then?
Yeah, well, look, this is a conversation that I guess I've... And one of the things I've been sort of banging the drum about Greenland for quite some time is Greenland's approach to its exploration industry is very cooperative and consultative. Mm. They reached out to the industry in the middle of last year, late sort of August, September last year, and asked us what we thought about and what the state of the junior explorer market was. And our feedback, I think, led to what is a significant benefit to all exploration companies in Greenland that have licenses between the year six and year 11 lifespan, is that there's an expenditure holiday on these. And given that we've just made a significant acquisition from Cairn, as your listeners would know about, we have two licenses that fall into that category. So what that means to us is a pretty significant saving on exploration expenditure that would have had to have been done. So it's just another example of why we are in Greenland and why we feel Greenland is a place that offers, you know, a really supportive environment for these types of activities. You know, it's a positive for the company there, Justin.
Yeah, good. Okay. And 2 days ago, you announced the exercise of Blue Jay option and the change of the name. So take us through this, the previous structure and the, now the structure going forward and the change of the name, Rob, if you could.
Sure. Look, I think that the point now, as I mentioned, is that the company has sufficient comfort that the resource is going to be compelling, such that it's important to secure the tenure of the asset for all shareholders of Finnost/Blue Jay, as you point out. Now, the price for the acquisition of that 40%, Justin, was set back in December 2015. It was for a fixed number of shares. Essentially, shareholders can take comfort in the fact that Finnost is issuing about 14.5% of its equity for the 40% of the project it doesn't already own. So I think it's a pretty good deal for shareholders.
Yeah.
And it's one that the vendors, which is the management of the company, are supportive of. So I think it's a win-win, this. Now, in relation to changing the name, well, for those that are interested, the Blue Jay, the Greenlandic Blue Jay, is a bird that is the first migratory bird into the Arctic Circle in the start of spring. And it's sort of a likeness to ourselves that we see in that. Second to that, the Tula Air Base was constructed under the sort of the pseudonym Operation Blue Jay. So a lot of similarities and a lot of synergy there with that particular name change. The new Epic ticker will be JAY for all your listeners.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, to me, I know it's pretty superficial to most people, but one of the things I think when I'm looking at companies, and when people mention a company to you, if the name is not familiar, it doesn't stick in people's heads, you know. And Finnost, you know, it's always been a hard. Is it Finnost? But the nice Blue Jay bird, to me, and the ticker J will stick in your head. So let's go back to the project, Rod. Where are you? What stage are you now with this project, and what's next?
Yeah, okay. I think, look, shareholders, interested parties can look forward to a little bit more news on the metallurgy, the pilot plant, the EIA, SIA engagement process. We've just been approved for the government stakeholder part of that license towards an exploitation license. The resource, most critically, the resource comes out, you know, mid-March, end of March. I think that you know, our work programs for this year are going to be far more extensive than a lot of people would have otherwise envisaged. And the marketing side of the business is very much in full swing. I think that, you know, there's been a lot of behind the scenes put into that. I mean, if people want to read that announcement on the 25th of January, Bruno is a specialist in the marketing space.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, almost, I would say, personally, without peer. He is really one of the best.
Okay.
And the fact that he wants to work with us and feels that our product is going to fit into the ilmenite, you know, sulfate slag, all these various little post holes within this particular industry, I think speaks volumes about the potential of his company. So the fact that we have the resource coming out, marketing underway, work programs and licensing into expanded environment in the middle of the year, you know, things actually look pretty good, Justin.
Excellent. All right. Well, listen, you know how it works here at Vox Markets every day on the podcast. I highlight the top five most followed companies. Now, someone needs to hit the follow button on your page to get in that list. So, Rod, give us three reasons why someone now who's not following you should consider hitting that follow button.
Resource.
And I think that means the resource is quite important here. And like you say, mid-March, end of March, maybe we'll get some more figures around that. So it'll be good to hear. Rod, thanks very much. Yeah. And speak again soon, fella. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. Morning, Chris. You're right.
All right, Justin. Hello. Yeah, very well. Thanks. Very well. Busy day.
Good. Well, I'd like to get you on because I dwell in the smaller, you know, almost micro-cap space. I like the excitement of volatile stocks. But I do, like I said, I love, you know, investing in stocks generally. And so I've lost a bit of touch with the bigger caps. So it's always nice to get you on to give me the headlines of what's happening. And I know that the banks have had some results out this week. And from top of mind, I mean, Lloyds did quite well, didn't they? And HSBC, obviously, a bit of a shock at the start of the week. Now, Barclays out today. What's happening there?
Yeah, Barclays actually... They did all right. Shares are up 2-3% as we speak. And essentially, if you look at what they're saying, profits are recovering, dividend is going up or being reinstated. They're even closing the non-core part of their business. That's sort of the bad bank part. Six yeah. months early. So three ticks in the boxes there. I did a little bit of analysis on the numbers. And I have to say that they've got, I'm going to use a bit of terminology here, Justin, apologise, this early in the morning for a bit of maths. But their tangible book value is 290p now. Yeah. And they're heading towards a 10% return on equity. Now, in my view, that means the share price should be heading towards 290 pence, mm-hmm. should be trading at around 1x tangible book. They're trading at the moment about 240 pence, yeah. and I think it cruises up there over the course of the next year or two. So for me, Barclays is an exciting share. I am long the stock. I do like it. And I thought today's numbers reiterated that. That combination of bit of a Barclay card, bit of retail and corporate banking, bit of investment banking still, of course, which is kind of doing okay, is still quite beguiling. It's still kind of, from a sum of the parts perspective, still quite attractive.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I remember having or chatting about, and that's what stood out at Barclays, tangible book value, even down, you know, when it was at sort of 160. I remember it was up above, you know, the two, high twos, and I'm thinking, wow, will it get there? It is grinding towards that. But you got to say, the closer it gets towards like the 280, looking on the chart, the more resistance it'll get, I suppose. So definitely some upside from 240 to 280, but will it get above that level,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But hey, you know, that's 10-15% above where we are at the moment. So
exactly,
I think, you know, from a returns perspective, you take that and then reassess. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. When the banks were way out of favour back in late June, early July last year, the tangible books were about the same. The difference was people's expectations about returns, to use again a bit of terminology, the return on equity was kind of really low. And the reality is the world's not so bad. These banks are simplifying and cutting costs and are sort of learning how to push up their returns. So you put it all together, I think Barclays is good for a quick run, as you say, at that 280, 290 level over the course of the next year or so. For me, that's why I own Barclays stock. Pretty chilled on Lloyds, which on the same sort of measurements is sort of getting much closer to a fairer value. HSBC looks a bit overvalued to me. So a bit of everything in the banking sector. For me, Barclays is probably the boy at this moment in time.
Yeah. And I do a sort of 1 minute update, macro update in the morning on the podcast. I noticed that Lloyds up 100 and pre-tax profit up 158% to £4.24 billion. And that sounds quite nice, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. A few one-offs as always with banking stocks, but there you go. We won't get any more into banking accounting, otherwise no one will be listening, I think.
Yeah, okay. What else is there? Any other exciting stocks there, Chris?
So we've got to talk about the mining sector, because earlier this week we had Billiton and Anglo's coming out with further indications of a recovery of their earnings. Interestingly, since the earnings came out, both were pretty good. The stocks have been down. And I think mining stocks are in a sort of a travel and arrive kind of scenario. They really have traveled over the last year. They were clearly very oversold, and now they've had a wonderful renaissance. And I think they need a new trick to sort of kick on further from here. The one which is kind of interesting in that regard, the ultimate travel and arrive stock in the mining space, of course, has been Glencore. Because, I mean, you know, 18 odd months ago, you had those broker notes saying Glencore was worth precisely zero. Well, yeah. You look at the share price today and it's looking pretty handsome at 320 odd pence or something. So, you know, it's been a wonderful renaissance. And also it's been based on simplification, a touch of money raising, focusing on their core assets. And of course, you know, the recovery of certain commodity grades. Their numbers today were all right. The shares are slightly up as we speak. But again, I'm getting the feeling, what's the next trick? In the results, there's a couple of interesting slides. One of them talks about copper and iron ore, and they believe that copper is looking much more attractive than iron ore. Maybe they're talking their own book, but they've got some numbers comparing the two, surpluses and deficits. And in their opinion, it's actually a view Billiton broadly shares as well, that copper looks a bit more interesting going forward. So maybe that has some, you know, extrapolation read-through benefits to some of the smaller plays. Yeah. Well, also may be interesting.
Do you know what, Chris? Yeah. I was going to say, it's one of my major stock holdings is a copper explorer going to developer now in Indonesia. And I've been reading about copper a lot. And, of course, you've got the massive BHP Billiton Chile strike in Ekondizia, whatever it's called. You know, which produced about 5% of the total global copper output. They're mined there in Chile. And they're not working. They've also got Freeport-McMoRan in Indonesia having disagreement with the government about not allowing to export copper concentrate. So it's having an impact. And generally, they were saying that copper supply anyway is going to deficit without these two issues. So, we can see it, rallying from here, copper, because it's been at all-time multi-year lows, you know. And, of course, you've got the Chinese now building up their economy and Donald Trump effect, and you think, well, people are going to need more copper. And new tech stuff like cars, you know, electric cars and all that, and mobile devices, they take all kinds of copper, so it's needed, you know. So, it'd be interesting play, copper, I think. Very interesting. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I'd say the other aspect is that they're actually seeing CapEx, their CapEx spending going up in 2017 versus 16. And that's kind of interesting. Maybe they pushed it down too low because obviously they were in all sorts of corporate issues. But again, a little bit of positive change there. And again, when you look at what Anglo said, what Billiton said, you kind of get the impression that we're at a low point now in terms of mining CapEx. And the next stage, the next iteration is for it to go up. And I think we're pretty much at the same space in the energy area as well. So that sort of CapEx side, again, that sort of indicates that the big boys are getting a little bit more comfortable knowing that they need to spend a little bit more money. You know, that's clearly going to help some of the services companies, I would suggest, going forward, potentially. But also it's an indication generally that sentiment has improved a bit, albeit after massive share price increases and obviously commodity prices heading the right way over the last year or so. So, you know, for me, I need to see the next trick for these guys to get me excited. But what a ride since that zero pence broker note. And anyone who's been on that train's done rather well.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you see big stocks, I mean, really big stocks have a warning like that. I remember it falling 25% in one day, which is pretty much unheard of on, big cap stocks like that. And it thinks, well, maybe it should have got in there, that kind of warning. And I'm thinking the same about BT now, and thinking, you know, BT dropped off massively, and what, $545 million pound loss in the Italian army. There may be some, you know, some things coming out off from that that's not as good. But you see, with a big company like that, when it's overly sold, you can't go far wrong if you're scaling sensibly, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's some truth in that. And obviously each situation is different. On BT, as you mentioned it, you know, my view was at 300 pence, it was a clear buy, and I did. But my feeling is that it was a buy at 300 pence for a bounce back to 330. And we're basically getting towards there now.
Yeah, yeah.
And my feeling is you need to then see the next set of numbers before you make a call of what to do from here. So my view from a trading perspective, it's nearly over and you should probably be having a bit form a neutral book.
Yeah.
But if the next set of numbers is all right and they appear to be turning around, they've just appointed a new guy for the troublesome bit across Europe and stuff like that, then the fuller recovery of the shares is back towards that £4 level, particularly if you believe things like the EE deal is going to be really value-adding and stuff like that. So, you know, as always, there are many trades within a stock price move. Yeah. My feeling is, from a trader's perspective on BT, at 3.30 I'm out, I'm made by 10%, and then I'm going to chill, wait for the next set of numbers and go from there. But we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Chris. Thanks very much. Good to speak. Speak next week, fella.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
Good morning, Just, from a very breezy south of England. Yes, I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, that's Doris, isn't it? Doris, yeah. Storm Doris.
Hurricane Doris, yeah, bless her. Yeah, bless her. I think she's blown herself out now, because about an hour ago it was battering at the window of my office here, but now the sun's come out.
The sun's come out here, but it's still very windy. It went dark and rainy at one point, but it's still very windy. Maybe we've seen the back end of Doris, which doesn't sound attractive, but maybe that's where the wind is coming from, the back end of Doris. there we are.
Doris has a windy back end, yes.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's ignore Doris's back end for a while. Let's move on to some stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, a couple of stocks from this week, just before we go on to the main pick of the day. Want to update listeners on a feedback PLC. FDBK is the epic code.
Yeah.
This is a company that has two core products: Cambridge Computed Imaging, which provides imaging archives, and has a joint venture with a Polish company called Future Processing, which is showing promise. And of course, the Texrad textual analysis software, which is currently being used all over the world in leading hospitals to analyze images for tumors and a number of conditions. In fact, we've been looking at some of what Texrad have been doing, some of the papers that the software is being used as as a research tool within, and it's just revealed the diversity and the breadth of the Texrad application, which is pretty interesting. That's actually on the brand website under the feedback page. So if listeners want to take a look at that, that's easy to find. But the interim revenues were pretty static, actually. The revenues came in at 203,000 versus 225 last time. The loss before tax was 115,000 compared to 132,000 last time. So losses are down. But what Chairman Alistair Riddell did say was that they had seen a big jump in Texrad orders before the period end, and as a consequence, they expect a jump in second half revenues. So that really bodes well for the full year results. They also mentioned the joint venture with Alliance Medical, and Alliance Medical supply CT scanners at hospitals throughout the UK and further afield, and they're working with Alliance Medical to integrate Texrad into these CT scanners. So this is just another example of how Texrad is being used and has a multiple array of applications that is growing rapidly throughout the UK and in fact the world.
Marvellous.
So feedback shares are currently trading just below 0.2p. It's worth about 4 million at the moment, but clearly if the revenues jump as the company progresses, I think we can see the prospects are very bright there.
Marvellous. Okay, and on the next, what are you looking at, Al?
Another company, Advanced Oncotherapy, just wanted to update listeners on this. There has been a concern with the level of funding, and indeed when the light machine, that's the proton beam therapy machine, will come to production. Was interested to note this week that first of all, AVO are holding two analyst presentations, one in London next Monday and one in Zurich, Switzerland on Tuesday. This is part of the new CEO Nicolas Serendor's 100-day review, and prior to that, this week the company announced a 26 million flexible financing plan from Bracknell Investment Group. This is I believe, being put in place by Nicolas Serendour, and it basically sees the light machine through to production and will allow for the completion of the Harley Street facility. So that's good news. So investors holding stock in Advanced Oncotherapy should take comfort from the fact that the company is now fully financed up to that point. And clearly, we can expect some more at the presentations that that Nicolas will make next week.
Yeah, what are the a large chunk of money, but I'm looking at the details there on the shares. What is it? Is it to receive 20% of nominal value of each tranche? Is that right? 1.3, 10 tranches of 1.3? Is that right? Yeah, okay. All right. Go on.
10 tranches. They can control the timing of the release. It's basically there when they want it, when they need it, and it's a flexible drawdown facility. And Brankner are there to support AVO as and when the money is needed. Clearly, if further sales are announced between now and the summer, or now and next year, then some of that may change. But they've got a flexible arrangement there. So from a security standpoint, investors should take comfort from that, because the company is now financed, and clearly if they can accelerate sales further, then they may not need to draw down on this at all, which could be even better.
Yeah, all they need to do is get a sale there, I think, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the key, Jess. As you say, I think that's the transition phase we're in now. Clearly, Harley Street is going to be the flagship. That's going to be the premises where they can display the machine, and investors or hospitals and organizations wanting to come and see the machine can see it in operation there. So I think we will see sales accelerate as we get closer to the completion of Harley Street. But that's what they need to do, clearly, and that's the phase the company are in at the moment.
Yeah, chart is not looking good. It's heading towards that 50. It's 58 pence at the moment, 58.5. This seems to be major support at 50. We'll see if it holds there, because that's a major support level there. All right, on the last stock, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, this is a new company, and it was flagged up last week. It's a company called Defence. That's Defence with an X. The epic code is DFX. Now, this was flagged up by my colleague Dr. David Paul at VectorVest. Just a bit of background on Defence. They provide security solutions for mobile devices and personal computers. Clearly, the cybercrime and cybersecurity is a massive global issue at the moment, and this is a company engaged in that part of it. And when you consider the jump in internet traffic through mobile devices now, Defence are in a very, very strong position. So they've got a number of product suites providing antivirus and cyber protection across all platforms. That's iOS, that's Android, and so on. The company provided trading updates at the end of last month, said expected full year revenues of 7.3 million euros, which represents 57% year-on-year organic growth, which is no mean achievement. They've also made the first acquisition of company a cloud backup business called MemoPal, and the CEO was very sort of bullish about the prospects, because the second half revenues brought the full year into profitability. They're very confident going forward. Now, time 70p in number last year. They're currently trading at 108p, but VectorVest Metrics place a valuation of around 140p on these. So clearly great growth potential. They're in a great market, an expanding sector, and one would assume that if they go forward as they've done this year, and that they may well make several more acquisitions, then we've got a company with great prospects. Still only worth £9 million pounds sterling, been as high as 160p this year, currently trading at 108p. So it's certainly one to watch and to put on your watch list, if nothing else.
Yeah, definitely a huge growth area. I had the guys on from Defence on the podcast a while back, and I haven't heard from them. We have to get them back on. Like an update there, because, like I said, it's a fastly growing market. So it's DFX. Thanks for that, Al. And speak next week, fella. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, Jess, you too. Have a great weekend. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Boom. Audio boom. There's a bit of news in the rounds yesterday about their distribution deal with iHeartMedia. I do hold Audioboom shares, and iHeartMedia One of the biggest media companies in America. They have about 96 million registered users, and Audioboom are going to use their network as well as to insert ads and distribute their content. So it's a good deal there. At four, 88 Energy, that's 88E. At three, PCG Entertainment. PCGE is a ticker there. At two, Ectech, that's EQT. Hello, QT. Nicola covered that on the charts earlier on the podcast with Nicola Duke. Check that out for the annotated chart. And number one, the most liked, or most followed company, I should say, in the last 24 hours on Vox is Servision. Ticker there is SEV. They did a major sort of premium placing rise. And I don't know what the price is at the moment. Let's just check what Servision price is. But the rise in the raising price was 11.4. And they were at 2.75 pence yesterday. Oh, that began today at 6.1 pence. But still well below that placing price, 11.4. So that's why people are following it, reading more about it. Here are the top five most liked RNSs on the platform. At five, Boss Global Holdings. And that's ticker there, Boss. Sales update. At four, Edenville Energy, EDL. Wash plant secured. I'm glad of that. At three, Ferrum Crescent. That's FCR. Lead zinc exploration results and drilling strategy. At two, Oxford Pharma Science, hoping to get on the podcast hopefully next week. OXP company update. And at number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets this morning was from Asia Met Resources, ARS. It's ticker there, ARS. And the Asia Met review highlights exploration upside around BKM. And just seems like that place is just drowning in mineralization there. So, hopefully you can get it, Stephen, the VP of Exploration, on the podcast very soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. And don't forget, everything you hear in this podcast is just investment. Everything here on this podcast is just information. It's not investment advice. All right. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.